All right, welcome back, everybody, to the deep dive. We're going to jump into something today, a pretty big case. Payne v. Arkansas,
Ah, yeah.
1958.
Big one, yeah.
This case is going to, I think, really kind of, even if you think you understand due process and confessions and all that,
Right.
this one, I think, is going to really kind of get in there and kind of show how critical it is, these protections that we have.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unsettling, frankly.
For sure.
So let's just jump right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's Payne is more than just like a case in a book.
Right.
It's really about the fairness of the whole process,
Right,
right?
right.
It's not even just about like whether the outcome was right.
Yeah.
It's like, was the process fair?
Yeah.
And I think Payne kind of highlights that.
Yeah.
And this idea of like, you know, how unfair a trial is if it's based on something that wasn't freely given.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, the question here is, in this case, whether admitting this confession violated his 14th Amendment right to due process.
Yeah.
And the circumstances are really upsetting.
Yeah, and the circumstances are, I mean, that's why I said unsettling.
Totally.
So Frank Payne,
Yeah.
a 19-year-old black man in Arkansas
Right.
in 1958.
All right. So we're in the Jim Crow South.
Yeah. He
Yeah.
had a fifth grade education,
Okay.
and from what I was reading, he had limited mental capacity as well.
Okay.
So right from the get-go, you're not dealing with someone who is on an equal footing with law enforcement.
For sure.
And so he's arrested without a warrant in connection with the murder of a lumber dealer.
Right.
So this is where it starts getting really concerning.
Okay.
They hold this guy incommunicado for 3 days.
Whoa.
No lawyer, no family, no friends, nothing.
No contact with the outside world.
Yeah, and they barely fed him during this time.
Wow.
Just total isolation.
Yeah, and that isolation is actually a really big part of what the court's going to later look at
Right.
when they look at what makes up coercion.
Right.
Wow.
It's, yeah.
Just that sense of powerlessness
Yeah.
makes someone really susceptible to, you know, whatever the people detaining them are trying to do.
Right.
But what really gets me here is the actual tactic that the police used.
Oh, yeah.
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
So the police chief comes in and tells Payne that there's this mob outside,
Okay.
30 to 40 people that are threatening to harm him.
Right.
But he says that if he confesses, he'll try to protect him.
Oh my God. That's like right out of a movie.
I know, right?
So you're talking about really coercive tactics
Yes.
directly playing on this guy's fear,
Yeah.
this really immediate fear of being hurt.
Yeah. Immediate physical danger.
So what happened? I mean, what did he do when he was given this offer?
Well, I mean, he confessed, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You think you have this mob outside that's ready to get you and you can just confess and maybe,
Yeah, maybe they'll protect you.
maybe they'll protect you. So, yeah, he confessed right away.
So he's faced with this impossible choice,
Yeah.
right? Confess or face this mob.
Yeah.
It's just awful. And so obviously after this it went to trial,
Yeah.
right?
Right.
And what did Payne's lawyer say about all of this?
Well, his lawyer argued that this confession obviously was coerced and it shouldn't be allowed in as evidence.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, given these
You
circumstances.
would think.
Yeah.
But the judge decided to admit the confession anyway.
Wow.
So they go through with the trial and the jury finds Payne guilty of first degree murder
Right.
and he gets sentenced to death.
Wow.
And so this really shows like how hard it is to challenge a confession,
Yeah.
even when there's all this evidence, all this stuff surrounding it.
It's hard to get it suppressed, even with these facts.
Even with these facts, yeah. So, and there was another interesting thing here that that happened was that Arkansas law at the time said that you have to bring someone before a magistrate, in a timely manner,
Right.
and that didn't happen.
Right.
So, a violation of state law right there.
Yeah, and that's important, right? That's like a procedure to protect people's rights
Right.
after they're arrested.
Exactly. So obviously they appeal this case.
Right.
And the basis of the appeal was, of course, that his due process rights were violated
Of course.
under the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
And so that takes us to the Supreme Court.
That's right. So the big question here, right, that the Supreme Court had to look at, does admitting a confession that was coerced violate the due process clause of the 14th Amendment?
Right.
Like point blank. And here's the thing, and they were really focused on this. What if there is other evidence?
Right.
That shows that the person might be guilty.
Right.
Does it still violate due process?
Yeah. So is a coerced confession, does that inherently just corrupt the entire trial?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what did they say?
So the court said yes.
Yeah.
Straight up. Justice Whitaker wrote for the majority, said that any confession that's obtained by coercion makes the trial unfair.
Yeah.
And violates due process.
Yeah.
And the thing that's really important here is that it doesn't matter what the confession says.
Right.
It's about how they got it.
Right. Yeah.
It's not just about whether or not they got other evidence.
Yeah.
It's the process.
Yeah.
So this was a really big deal.
Yeah.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
Because a lot of states kind of were going with this idea of harmless error.
Right.
Which basically means like, oh, if we have enough other evidence that shows he's guilty.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter if the confession was coerced or not.
Right.
But Payne shut that down.
Yeah, rejected that.
Big time. Especially when it comes to confessions.
Right.
So they were basically saying a coerced confession is such a huge violation that it's never okay.
Right.
It's never a harmless mistake. Even if there's other evidence, it just contaminates the whole trial.
Yeah, exactly. And so they decided this whole thing based on the totality of circumstances is the term.
Yeah, the totality of circumstances. And I think that's really key here.
Right.
Because they didn't just look at the threat from the police chief in isolation.
Right.
Right. They looked at the whole picture.
Right.
So, okay, he's young. He doesn't have a lot of education.
Yeah.
He might have some mental limitations.
Right.
He was held in total isolation, like we talked about, for days.
Right.
With barely any food.
Yeah.
And then, on top of all that, they threatened him with this mob.
Yeah.
Like, orchestrated by the police.
By the police, yeah.
It's just insane.
Yeah, it's wild. And there's this great quote from the court that really captures it.
Yeah, yeah.
There is torture of mind as well as body. The will is as much affected by fear as by force.
Wow.
That's powerful.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
So it shows that it's not just about physical abuse.
Right. It's not just the physical stuff.
Right.
It's mental, too.
Yeah. They were really trying to manipulate and put all this fear in him.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they could break him, basically.
Yeah. And they really saw that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The court recognized that.
Yeah.
That he couldn't make a free decision.
Right.
A rational decision with all of this going on.
Right.
And ultimately, it was this choice, right?
Yeah.
Confess or face this mob.
Confess or face this mob.
Like, what are you going to do?
Right.
It wasn't a voluntary confession.
Yeah. And so, you know, you could argue, well, you know, the confession, you know, lines up with some of the other evidence, so
right.
It's okay.
Right.
But the court said, and this is another great quote, no one can say what weight the jury gave the confession.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Because even if there is other evidence, once a jury hears a confession,
right,
you never know how much they relied on it,
okay.
Even if there's other stuff.
It's impossible to know.
Yeah. So that's the danger of a coerced confession. Mm-hmm. You could prejudice the whole thing.
Right.
And you just don't know what they relied on to get to their verdict.
Right.
And the court understood that.
Yeah.
They got it.
Yeah. So Arkansas tried to use a previous case, Stein v. New York from 1953.
Okay.
To argue that, you know, they should uphold the conviction because of this other case.
Right.
But the court wasn't having it.
Yeah.
So what was different about this case from Stein?
So the big difference is in Stein, the police denied that there was any coercion.
Oh, okay.
Right. They were like, no, we didn't do that.
Okay.
But in Payne, the police chief admitted it.
Oh, wow.
Right. He was like, yeah, I threatened him with a mob.
Yeah.
So that was like undeniable proof of coercion.
Yeah.
And the court was like, nope, this is different from Stein.
Right.
This is bad.
Right.
This is really bad.
Yeah.
And so the court's thinking wasn't just about like, is the evidence reliable? It was about the principle of due process.
Right.
It's not just about getting to the right answer.
Right.
It's also about how the government acts.
Right.
To get that answer.
Right.
Like, okay. They can't just do whatever they want.
Right.
Even if they think the guy's guilty.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so they were saying due process is there to stop the government from overreaching.
Right.
To make sure everyone gets treated fairly.
Yeah.
Even if they did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The ends don't justify the means.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we had a pretty strong majority opinion here.
Right.
But there was also a dissent and a concurrence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. So Justice Clark wrote the dissent.
Okay.
And he basically said that Arkansas followed the rules.
Okay.
to decide if the confession was voluntary or not.
Okay.
And he also said there was enough other evidence.
Yeah.
Like witness identifications.
Yeah.
To support the conviction. So he thought they should have followed Stein.
Right.
And just let the conviction stand.
Right.
But, like we talked about, the majority didn't buy that.
Right.
They saw this as way worse.
Right.
A way bigger violation.
Yeah.
And they said it just ruined the fairness of the trial.
Right.
And then Justice Harlan, he agreed with the majority to overturn.
Okay.
But his reasoning was a little different.
Okay.
He was really focused on that threat.
Yeah.
From the police chief.
Yeah.
About the mob.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's enough right there.
Yeah.
We don't even need to look at the other stuff.
Right.
That's coercion.
Right. Yeah. And so even within the court, there's this, you know, this kind of tension.
Totally.
Right. Between like the state's power and the federal due process guarantee.
The classic tension, right?
Yeah.
And this case shows how the feds stepped in to make sure those rights were protected
right.
across the board.
Yeah.
So this case, Payne, set some really important legal precedents.
Yeah.
What do you think those were?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is that coerced confessions always violate due process.
That's number one.
Right.
Absolutely.
No exceptions. Yeah. No harmless error here.
Right. And that the totality of circumstances test is the way to figure out if a confession was voluntary.
That's number two.
Right.
Spot on.
You have to look at everything surrounding the confession, not just one thing.
Yeah. Look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
And Payne actually had a huge influence on later cases.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Like Miranda v. Arizona, for example.
Exactly.
Huge case.
Huge.
Yeah.
Miranda brought in all those safeguards.
Right.
Right to remain silent, right to a lawyer.
Yeah.
But Payne really set the stage for that.
Right.
It showed how important it is to protect people from pressure and coercion.
Yeah, yeah.
During interrogations.
Yeah.
Miranda was like the practical application of the principles from Payne.
Right, yeah. And that test, that totality of circumstances test,
yeah,
that's still used today.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's still how we decide if a confession was legit.
Yeah, absolutely. Courts look at all sorts of things.
Yeah.
The person's age, their IQ, were they in a good mental state? How long was the interrogation? What tactics did the police use? You know, the whole nine yards.
Right, right.
But, I mean, the test isn't perfect.
Right.
It's not always clear cut.
Right.
Different judges might look at the same facts and come to different conclusions.
Right, right.
It's subjective.
Yeah.
But the core message of Payne is still crystal clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Confessions that come from fear, threats, coercion.
Yeah.
They're not allowed in court.
Right.
Period. Yeah. No matter what.
No matter what. So for all the law students out there listening to us today,
yeah.
What's the big takeaway from Payne?
I think the biggest thing is that due process is not just about following the rules.
Right.
It's deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's about respecting people's dignity.
Yeah.
When they're facing the power of the state.
Yeah.
How we get evidence matters.
Yeah.
And if it's done through coercion, it just wrecks the whole system.
Right.
Even if the evidence itself is strong.
Right.
We can't have that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you are a lawyer, you know, representing someone who's been accused.
Yeah.
Especially if they're young or maybe they're vulnerable in some way.
Yeah.
Or they were isolated when they were being questioned.
Right.
Or if they confessed under weird circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, Payne gives you something to stand on.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's like a roadmap for challenging that confession.
Right.
You have to investigate how that confession came about.
Right.
You have to know your client's background, how they were detained, what happened during questioning.
Yeah.
Like, dig deep.
Dig deep.
Because Payne is a reminder that justice is not just about the outcome.
Right.
It's also about the process.
Yeah.
It has to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into Payne v. Arkansas.
It has.
1958.
A classic.
But I think we've given everybody a lot to think about.
For sure.
But
right.
I want to leave you all with one more thought.
Okay.
Since 1958, how has our understanding of due process changed?
Ooh, good question.
You know?
Yeah.
What about modern interrogation techniques?
Right.
Do the principles from Payne, you know, like about psychological coercion,
yeah.
do those still apply today?
It's an ongoing discussion.
Yeah.
And Payne is a big part of that.
Yeah.
So think about that.
Yeah. That's something to think about.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on the deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you all next time.
See you next time.
Bye.